Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Cecile Raynor, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Boston, Massachusetts. She's been teaching for almost 20 years now. She works with a wide variety of students, ranging in age from 7 to 77, and she also has a special interest in the connection between the Alexander Technique and an Alexander Technique principle, sometimes called non-doing, and we'll describe that a little bit in a moment, and mindfulness. Cecile, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome, Robert.
Well, it's good to have you here. I wonder if you could begin by giving our listeners a very short description or definition of the Alexander Technique.
Sure. All teachers have their way of explaining it, and often I explain that it's a mind-body approach to reclaiming effortless postural balance by freeing ourselves from harmful habitual patterns of body and mind. And I focus on the body and mind because it's not just a body thing.
Right. Well, and of course, F. Matthias Alexander, who's the guy who started this work out 120 odd years ago, mm-hmm. Was almost forced into the conclusion or to an understanding that body and mind are really just two aspects of the same thing.
Yeah.
I think when most people think of the Alexander Technique, or most people who've heard of it or know someone who's taken lessons, it's usually in people's minds associated with helping people with things like backaches or stiff shoulders or carpal tunnel syndrome or that sort of thing, or helping performers like musicians or dancers or actors do their work more gracefully and more effectively. I don't think most people think of the Alexander Technique, at least initially, as a tool for developing mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Is that your experience with your students as well?
Yeah. In general, they don't come for that. They come for back problem and joint problem and posture, and that's what they come for. But they end up getting a bit more than that.
Yes, they do. They do. And maybe it would be useful to, before we get into how the technique relates to mindfulness, to talk about a term, a sort of a technical term used by Alexander people called non-doing. Mm-hmm. Would you like to give a little description of what that means?
Yeah. I mean, I know that when I trained, it seemed very difficult to get a grasp of what that meant. But by now, I think it's not really, whether we are still moving or engaged with the world around us, doing something in a non-doing way means without excess tension, therefore without mental or physical grasping. That's how I would define it in the first stage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, doing things as simply and easily and, as you say, efficiently as possible, and not adding extra stuff to mm-hmm. the doing. I wonder if you could, it might be helpful to give a very simple example of how someone might, what the difference between doing and non-doing might be from an Alexander perspective for take some simple activity like standing up from a chair or walking across the room?
Mm-hmm. Typically when I have a new student and we start getting in and out of the chair, their tendency is to push themselves up. Mm-hmm. They'll push themselves up. Sometimes they might even use their hands and sometimes not. But one way or the other, there's muscles are like pushing or pulling or the skeleton up or in motion. And my experience is that that is absolutely not necessary. We have a postural mechanism that if we step out of our own way, they will. We just have to have an intention of movement, and the skeleton will, along with the muscles, start moving. But they won't. There is no need for excess tension, and most people tend to add more work to the motion than is needed.
And I think that relates to what a person's preconceived ideas about what they have to do in order, for example, to stand up from a chair,
mm-hmm.
that there's almost a certain level of tension that they have already decided is necessary instead of being in the moment and using whatever amount of work effort is needed at that moment.
Exactly. Yeah. And one little thing that I have them do right away to show them that they don't necessarily need that is when they're standing, I ask them to keep their feet on the ground, but to shift their weight over one foot and then over the other, and to notice how one of the foot with the torso, when the torso is above one foot, the foot starts spreading. And I tell them that being grounded is feeling that spreading of the feet, but I point out to them that when only transferring the weight above the feet created that, they didn't have to push against the floor to create that. And so I tell them that, you know, getting up is something similar. You just transfer your weight above your feet, and that combined with the intention of movement, and it triggers the postural mechanism. People go up, and it's often that wow experience of a first lesson. You know?
Yes, yes. When someone notices that they can do something they've done zillions of times, and
yes.
they are suddenly doing it in a way that almost seems like they're floating.
Exactly.
And of course, they're still doing some work, but they're just doing far less, and the work they're doing is more appropriate for whatever is needed at the very second that work is taking place.
Yeah, and yeah. just to see that just in that with that way of thinking, the movement allowed them to have way more effortlessness. Then they realize they can keep going in that direction if they keep using their thinking through their movement. And so it's usually a good start.
So. Would you say that a primary connection between the Alexander technique on the one side, if you were to put it there temporarily, and mindfulness on the other, is that in order to use the Alexander process, you have to be in the moment with your own self-directing or your own thinking?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sort of mindfulness, at least initially, around very simple tasks. Nothing
yes.
very esoteric about
Mm-mm.
standing up from a chair or walking
mm-hmm.
across the room. But I have a sense from reading some of the material that you've written
mm-hmm.
that it's your general take on it that can then carry over into, let's say, bigger issues of mindfulness.
Absolutely.
Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, the effortlessness we discover we can have with movement is also an effortlessness we can create in the way we live our life. And some of it can be more general and in areas that people are not always interested in, but some of them can be in areas that everybody has to deal with, like how we deal with pain, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people, when they experience pain, naturally they're going to tighten, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not aware in the way we are, the Alexander way, we tend to tighten and we tend to guard, and then we complicate the problem, we enhance the problem, to the point that it becomes a chronic problem. And just from that, the tension created with the guarding and the fear of pain and all of that. So, becoming aware of all that, people have a choice. Then they have a choice of how, next time they feel pain, are they going to fight with it, or are they going to be able to just notice that pain is not your our enemy.
Right.
Pain is just a fact of life, and if we can just take it as what it is, then we are less likely to create mental pain to add to the physical pain.
I it's kind of reminds me of an experience I had many, many years ago, long before encountering the Alexander technique, back when I was in university. When I had a little cyst removed from my chest, it was like at the doctor's office, they just removed it, a couple of stitches, and it was no big deal. But I noticed how I was tending to pull into that. And I just thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't really go much further with that thought. But looking back on it and thinking about maybe even more severe things of that kind, I could see how it wouldn't be hard, if you weren't conscious, to develop a pattern of pulling in long after the stitches have been removed and everything is healed. And that was like a little surgical intervention, but maybe some unpleasant emotional experience, or some fearful experience that you might have would cause you to contract. And then, years later, maybe if you take Alexander lessons, you'll discover you've been pulling yourself into yourself in an odd way.
Yes, and I actually talk about that. I explain to students that some things will clear just from becoming aware of how we create trouble for ourselves, but some aspects that are very intertwined with emotional, old emotional stuff might challenge us much more than something else. So we can evolve with the Alexander technique in different way depending on which problem we're dealing with and our history with it.
Right. And so I guess a question that might would come up in some listeners' minds is, are you saying that Alexander lessons would be a useful tool if you are on some kind of a spiritual path, or some sort of mindfulness path, like perhaps doing some kind of mindfulness
Practice.
practice, your meditation? I know that mindful practices seem to be kind of much more talked about these days, and I notice it a lot even in medical circles now, that doctors are recommending that their patients maybe should check out that form of meditation. Do you see the Alexander technique as something that would enable you to be better at it?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I started with meditation before the Alexander technique, and it's at the time I realized I had a very strong, active mind, like most of us, I guess, but it was definitely in the way. And when I started practicing meditation, actually, I came from a background of getting lots of migraine headaches, and from the first week that I started meditating 20 minutes a day, I was taking medication for my headaches every 4 hours, and it wasn't even helping anymore. And the first week that I started meditating 20 minutes a day, I didn't even need anything, and I didn't have the headaches. So for me, that was really the meditation is what started it all. But then I realized that I felt like I needed even more than just in meditation. We focus a lot on breathing, you know, observing the breathing and all this, and among other things. But I felt that the technique would give the technique has a wider range of mindfulness tools, if you will, because just you could be sitting in meditation and just becoming aware of where your sit bones are, or the contact of your feet with the ground, or you know, you have so many tools to step in the present moment, and you can. The Alexander technique is often associated with movement, but people forget that there's movement in space and there's inner movement. And you could be in a meditation pose, which requires, and you're not moving in space, but you can release from the inside. You can expand into yourself while you're sitting there. So to me, Alexander technique helped my meditation practice. That's absolutely how it went.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, we are always moving until we die.
Yes.
even if you're lying down and doing nothing, there's all kinds of stuff going on inside you, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little bit of breathing and digesting and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you, beyond, say, enhancing meditation practices or mindfulness practices, do you see any other ways that the study of the Alexander technique has that kind of carryover to our mental states?
Yes. The Alexander technique helps us be more aware of whatever it is we're doing, whenever, and with this practice of trying to witness the non-thinking part of our mind, which, you know, in everyday life we are all involved with that, what the Buddhists call monkey mind, that mind that just doesn't stop. And in meditation, you discover that you can be aware of the non-thinking part of the mind. And so when you have that experience, it helps you practice what we call in Alexander inhibition when we are in our everyday life, when we're talking with somebody and they say something we don't like. Instead of tightening, or even let's say we tighten, we're going to become aware that we're tightening, and we can choose to let go, and that's going to affect the interaction we have with that person. And so so it really seeps through our everyday life in very the technique is both subtle and very powerful. And so the way that awareness, as it's developed, can seep into everybody's life is also very subtle and very powerful. And I've had lots of students who felt like the Alexander technique changed their lives. And I have students who went on to become teachers. And so it can really profoundly affect one's quality of life.
Yes, and it probably worth mentioning that the Alexander term, inhibition, has nothing to do with the Freudian version of inhibition.
Yes.
Which is... You know, I think as Freud used it, it was about repression.
Mm-hmm.
And as Alexander used it, it's just about very gently saying no to stuff you don't want. But you're not trying to push it away. You're just you're just directing yourself gently in a different direction. It's too bad because Freud came second, but, you know, his version has sort of taken hold in the popular mind. Cecile, is there anything we haven't touched on that you think would be useful to say on this general topic?
The only little detail, which is not even the general thing, but I still have a paper to write about non-doing and delivering a baby.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, because I had a vi I have two sons, and I studied the technique in between the two, and the experience was incredibly different. And the main difference was that quality of non-doing and not. And non-reactiveness, you know, I feel like the technique is a way, it teaches us to respond to life instead of react to life. And in the situation of delivering a baby, to me, it made a world of difference. When a contraction came, I was able to release instead of fighting with it, and it completely changed my experience. So I just wanted to mention that because it just to show how the technique can be applied to any activity and anything really in our life.
Including doing nothing.
Yes.
When you're lying in bed, you can use it. I have to say, I mentioned that because I've been teaching now for about 30 years, and it's really only been in the last maybe year or so that I've started to notice little internal pulls in my head that would come up when I even thought about saying something or moving my jaw that I had never been aware of before. They're incredibly subtle, but they certainly manage to interfere with the natural flow of things. So I guess that's another aspect of the technique, which is that it really is like peeling layers off an onion. You may have some very obvious postural or movement issues that the technique will help you more or less resolve, but then you discover there's something else a little more subtle underneath them, and you could really, if you wanted to, I guess, devote your life to uncovering those patterns and learning how to release them. So anyway, I think this would be a good place to bring our conversation to an end. My guest today has been Cecile Raynor, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Boston. She's been teaching there about 20 years. If anything that we've been talking about appeals to you or interests you, we'll put a link to her website by the interview. And if you're in the Boston area, you might want to contact her. And should you happen to be anywhere else in the world besides Boston, we'll put a link to a website where you can learn more about the technique and locate a teacher in your area. Cecile, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.